tense, so she was likely stressed, but her reaction was completely irrational. He says it like that settles everything. She was stressed out? Is he actually making excuses for the way she acts? As if it's a one-time occurrence? As if it can all be explained away in one moment of irrationalness? Is that even a word? Irrational? I screech. I'm afraid the last bits of practical thought washed away with that smoky shot, and I'm officially a little drunk and a whole lot pissed off. Miko and Max snap to attention and are both staring at me, and it takes me a minute to realize it's because I'm laughing like a lunatic. Irrational, I say again. She once made me work until midnight, changing all her hanging files from white to off-white, because she said she wanted them to be whitish, not white-white. And you know what? I don't even know what that means, but I did it. I slammed the water bottle down on the table. And the week before Thanksgiving, Mark, at the Coffee Bean, was having a really bad day. He must have put 2 pumps of sugar-free vanilla in her coffee instead of one. And when she tasted it, she screamed at me for 9 minutes about how even a monkey could do a better job than I do. 9 freaking minutes. I know, because I actually timed it with my stopwatch app. And do you know how many times she called me on Christmas? Not the day before or the day after, but the actual holiday? Don't guess. I'll tell you. 11. I left the table during Christmas dinner to answer a call about how to work her TiVo. I'm absolutely indignant, and all three of them are looking at me nervously, but I just keep yelling and pointing an angry finger in random directions. And once, she made Miko throw up over dolphin-safe tuna. Grilled shrimp, Miko corrects me helpfully. Same difference. I glare at Brody, because he officially represents every man who has ever made an excuse for a woman's bad behavior because she has a nice rack. And this is only the teeniest, tiniest evidence of her being irrational, which you should know because she's working at being your girlfriend like it's her part-time job. But maybe anorexic mean girls are attractive to you. What do I know? Brody opens his mouth to say something, but I hold up my hand to cut him off. What I do know is that she doesn't even want me borrowing her stapler. So how are you surprised that she might have issues with me saying one word to you? What are you talking about? Brody asks at the same time Max barks. Ugh, no way. Brody might be a man whore, but he wouldn't touch her with a 10-foot pole. Now that my tirade is over, I'm having a little trouble getting my heart rate to slow down. While man whore seems a little judgmental, he rolls his eyes. Max is right. I don't have any interest in Sayla outside of work. Then, because he can't seem to help himself, he adds, but just to clarify, the pole in question is 9 feet at the absolute most. Max and Miko laugh nervously, but when I don't join in, the sound falls away. Even with Brody's attempt to diffuse the tension with a joke, there is no covering up the full-on trip I've just taken to Crazy Town. I've screamed at him, a person who, in my mind, if I went back over every single interaction we'd had, and believe me, I'll spend the next week doing exactly that, had never been anything but professional at the very least, and actually, friendly in his own aloof way, I'm pretty sure that even if the tequila isn't going to make me puke, the embarrassment definitely is. Will y'all excuse me for just a moment? I mean to sound breezy, but it comes out strangled. Dang it, stupid nervous accent. Miko makes a move to come with me, but I wave her back down. I'll only be a sec. I grab my clutch and hurry to the women's restroom as fast as my 5-inch heels can carry me. Insider information? The line for the stalls don't take nearly that long in VIP, so I have to come up with a way to kill some more time. Once I wash my hands and spend 5 extra minutes adding lip gloss and fluffing my hair, I have no other choice but to go outside and apologize. I take a deep breath, suddenly feeling depressingly sober, and head back out into the hallway. I walk a few feet and turn a corner, only to find Brody blocking my way. He looks a lot like the first time I saw him, so serious, so grown up. He makes me feel about 5 years old. I'm so sorry. I want so desperately to look anywhere but at him, but I don't want to be a coward. It's been a stressful month, and I have no idea why I took it out on you. You just have this uncanny ability to say things that set you off. I swear, it's not intentional. He says this with a little smile. A loud rumble of sound starts to grow from the other room, and it distracts me long enough to lose my train of thought. Over Brody's shoulder, I can see waitstaff handing out hats and noisemakers to the dancing crowd. I hadn't realized how close we are to midnight. I open my mouth to continue the apology, but he cuts me off. I'm thinking we should start again. I'm sorry? I'm confused. We've gotten off to a rocky start. We should start again. No misconceptions, no muffin-induced near-death experiences, no advice. The muffin comment is below the belt, but also sort of the perfect thing to say, because I'm smiling again. And 5 minutes ago, I wouldn't have thought I'd ever feel comfortable in his presence again. Let's pretend we're meeting for the first time. The idea is so sweet and so unlike anything I'd ever expect him to say. Maybe that's the point, though. Maybe I don't actually know him at all. He sticks out his hand. Behind him, the room of people start chanting. 10, 9, 8. I look down at his hand, then back up into his face. I'm Brody. He smiles a little. Only this smile isn't the sharp businessman smile. It isn't cocky or sexy or even a smirk. He looks a little shy. Like maybe he feels sort of ridiculous for holding his hand in midair, waiting for me to make the next move. 7, 6, 5. And I can't even help myself. I smile back. In fact, I think I fairly beam at this too beautiful man who doesn't have any reason to try and make me feel better, but is doing it anyway. 4, 3, 2, 1. As the crowd starts blowing noisemakers and singing Auld Lang Syne, I reach out and put my hand inside of his. I'm Landon. This isn't the first time he's ever touched me, but it's the first time I've anticipated what it would feel like when he does. Tingles work their way up my arm and around the back of my neck. Brody breaks out into a full-blown grin. It's nice to finally meet you, he says softly. And then, without letting go of my hand, he leans in and gives me a light kiss on my cheek. I'm so startled. And he must see the question on my face, because he shrugs and says, "It's New Year's." After walking me back to the lounge, Brody heads off to check in with his staff, and I'm relieved to see him go. For some reason, I feel even more nervous around him than before. Max hands me another shot of tequila as soon as I walk up to the lounge. I clink glasses with her, and we both mutter Sandra's name, because now it just feels like bad luck not to. So, that was awkward, she says at last. I sigh. It really, really was. I'm sorry about screaming at your brother. I could have told you had you just asked, she says earnestly. Then her face changes to one of annoyance. Honestly, Landon, I can't believe you think anyone related to me would be interested in someone so vile. Well, she is really pretty. And a terrible person. She looks at me seriously. Look, I don't like conversations like this, but I've had a lot of tequila, so you're going to have to deal, okay? Okay. Landon, the stuff you said, the stuff she does and says to you, it's bullshit. No job is worth all of that. You need to stand up for yourself or leave altogether. I smile sadly, because I can tell how uncomfortable it makes her to have a serious conversation, and God bless her for being so worked up on my behalf. I know what you're saying, I really do, but it's only been 4 months, and I know once I prove myself, she'll see that I'm... No, she won't, Max spits at me. You're being naive. It's not going to get better unless you... I found snacks! Mika sing-songs her way into our midst, bearing a platter piled high with sliders, little tomato soups with grilled cheese, and various kinds of cookies. It looks delicious, and it's a welcome distraction from the tense conversation. I grab a slider and take a bite. Where did you find these? I ask between bites. Max looks like she's debating whether or not to continue our conversation, but the late-night grub wins out. She plops down on the sofa in front of the tray. There were servers passing them around, so I snuck into the kitchen looking official and did a swipe. She breaks off a piece of cookie and pops it into her mouth. It was just like a Mentos commercial. Good work. I grab a grilled cheese and ignore the soup it came with. So, should we have another drink before we wrap this night up?
We should,
Miko says happily.
I'm on it.
Max gets up and heads to the bar. 2 hours later, we've danced our way to last call. Well, Miko and I danced. Max mostly makes fun of us from the sofa while blatantly ignoring the overtures of every male in the room. But we're all laughing and out of breath by the time we decide we need to call a cab. I texted Brody to have someone call for us. Max looks up from her phone. I've officially danced my hair into a sweaty rat's nest, so I pull it into a big messy bun on top of my head. I can't wait to get home and into my pajamas. Did Marco get us a cab? Max asks someone behind me. 2 a.m. on New Year's will take at least another hour and half a week's pay to get a cab home. I can drive you guys, Brody says, walking up. He's removed his jacket, and his sleeves are rolled up on his arms. I must be drunker than I thought, because all I can think about is how long he has to work out to have arms that look like that, and how someone who works inside all day has skin so tan. Bad thought, Landon. Bad thought. I blink twice to clear my head. You don't have to drive us. That would be such a pain. I expect the other girls to back me up, but Miko looks like she's about to fall asleep, and Max is already pulling on her jacket, ready to get out of here. It's no trouble. I don't mind. Brody reaches over to help Max with her coat. Nobody else puts up a fight, so I don't either. I just follow them down to the main floor and out to valet. Where's your ticket? Brody asks us. Everyone looks at me, and I realize what he's asking. You want to drive my car? I ask incredulously. I have a parking spot here, and you don't. He says like it should be obvious. Plus, I'm sure you'll need it tomorrow. But what about you? How will you get home after you drive us there? I try and argue. I'll manage. Don't worry. Ticket? He asks again. All right, Mr. Moneybags wants to drive my crappy car? This should be interesting. I hand him the ticket, and the valet hustles out to get it. When he pulls up, I get in the front seat with Brody, and Max sits behind me. Miko is asleep in the back before I even buckle my seatbelt. I glance at Brody, and he's staring dubiously around my car's interior like something might give him tetanus if he's not careful. I can't help but smile at this millionaire sitting behind the wheel of my twice-previously-owned clunker. What vintage is this, exactly? He asks with a little furrow in his brow. 97. It was a good year for Ford. I smile brightly. But I'm sure they'd bring your car around if this isn't up to your standards. I'm sure I have no idea what you're talking about. He makes an elaborate show of getting comfortable in the seat. Oh my gosh, I giggle. You're a total snob. Brody pulls the car out into traffic, but he doesn't even try and defend himself. I am. A little. But it's a knee-jerk reaction that I blame entirely on my parents. A few minutes in, and I'm totally fine. He taps the dashboard affectionately. In fact, I really like this car. I think I'm going to get a fleet just like this one, complete with the little vanilla-scented trees. He nods at the air freshener hanging from my gear shift. Such a jerk. I shake my head and hit the button to turn on the radio. The whole car shakes with the sound of ABBA's Dancing Queen, which is where we'd left off in my New Year's playlist earlier. Max groans in the back seat. Not this again. I laugh. I told you that if I had to drive, I also got to pick the music. Remember that the next time you want me to be your sober sister. I reach for my iPod to change up the music. Oh no, you can't cover it up. Now we all know about your dark love of Swedish pop. Brody taunts playfully. It's funny. Tonight he seems so young and carefree and so very un-Brody-like. I lower the volume a bit, but not all the way. ABBA is one of my favorites, and I'm not ashamed of it. This isn't the only thing I listen to. It's just what happened to be on when I shut the car off. Yes, I'm sure your musical taste is extensive. Brody doesn't sound convinced at all. Max snorts from the back seat. It is extensive. I listen to everything, and I know all the words. I challenge them both. All the words? Max scoots over, rebuckles in the middle seat, and reaches for my pink iPod that's connected to a cord in the cigarette lighter. Without missing a beat, I start crooning about digging the Dancing Queen. I should probably be embarrassed, because I've just unleashed my terrible voice on them both.
But I've had tequila, so... she says, scrolling through the songs in my collection. There are hundreds upon hundreds of every genre. I have no idea what she expects to find. She presses the button, and Kenny Rogers is singing to us now. So I sing right along with the gambler. I start with the train bound for nowhere and end up well past the chorus before I start giggling. Kenny Rogers is how you thought you'd stump me? Really? I laugh at her over my shoulder. Don't get too cocky yet, princess, Max says, and presses the button again. Now the Black Crows are singing. I don't even miss the opening line. I jump right in there with them about being hard to handle. The song switches without warning, but I don't even flinch. I rap right along with LL Cool J to the old school mix, including choreographed hand motions when the explosion sound effects hits the car speakers. I understand why she thought I might not know that one, but the joke's on her, because all us girls learn the lyrics at Brittany Thompson's slumber party in the 8th grade. Okay, hold on, this isn't challenging enough. Brody grabs the iPod from her and starts scrolling through the songs himself. It takes a minute, since he's also trying to watch the traffic in front of us, and I wait in giddy anticipation. Finally, he selects one. The music comes out, a distinctly 80s sound. Ah, I smile. I see what you've done here, I call over the loud music. Brody just smirks back at me. You've picked a Whitney Houston song, thinking I won't possibly embarrass myself further by trying to hit the high notes in front of you guys. Brody turns the car down another street and looks over at me in challenge. But there's something you don't know about me, I say seriously. And what's that? He asks. You don't know that I'm stalling, waiting for the right part in the song. And he must know it too, because he starts chuckling silently. And then it's the perfect moment. And both Whitney and I are belting it out about wanting someone to dance with. I'm bouncing along in my seat, well aware that I look and sound ridiculous, but far too thrilled to be winning this game than to care about it. You are such a nerd, Max says from the back seat. I lower the music and nod in agreement. Yes, but in my defense, I never claimed to be cool. After that, I turn the regular radio on, because Max says her ears would start bleeding if she has to listen to anything else of mine. 30 minutes later, we pull inside our parking garage, and Miko springs up like a jack-in-the-box as soon as the car is in park. Ugh, she moans. I need some water and, like, half a bottle of Tylenol, I think. She gets herself out of the car with the grace of a baby rhino and drapes herself across Max for support, ignoring the annoyed sounds of protest she gets in response. Lead on, Captain, she says through half-closed eyes. Max snorts, but starts helping her to the lobby anyway. Brody and I follow behind them, but by the time we get there, they've already gone up in the elevator. I've removed my shoes. I'm suddenly hyper-aware of how much taller he is than me. Let me wait with you until you get a cab. I turn and head for the doors to the street without waiting for a response. He follows me out front and types something quickly into his phone. He drops it back in his pocket and looks down at me. I feel nervous again, and also very short as I look up at him. I need to feel the silence. Thank you so much for the ride home and everything tonight. We had such a good time. I swing my heels back and forth in my hand, anxious. I'm glad you had fun. He smiles sincerely. I look down at my stocking feet. We need to go on a date. My head snaps up in utter shock. He's asking me on a date? He's asking me on a date. I open my mouth, but no words come out. I'm fairly sure I look like a deer in the headlights. I've never even been on a real date before, because I doubt this man would count football games and group outings to the Dairy Queen as a real anything. We can't go on a date? My voice sounds strangled. He actually laughs. And why not? I clamor for some explanation that makes sense. Because we work together, well, sort of. Because if my boss finds out, she'll freak. I'm counting the reasons off on my fingers as I come up with them in exasperation. Because I hardly know you, and you're like 30. 32, actually, he adds helpfully. 32! I point at him accusingly. See there, you're 9 years older than I am. No, I'm sorry, we can't go on a date. I have the strongest urge to put my shoes back on like some kind of armor. Okay, We won't go on a date, he agrees.
Well, that was a little too easy.
Now I do start slipping my shoes back on, because even if it seems ridiculous, I need some height for this conversation. He offers me a hand to steady myself, but I bat it away. When I'm back on higher ground, I look at him and challenge. He runs a hand through his hair, but it flops right back over his forehead. Wonder if anyone has ever told him he looks like a Calvin Klein ad. We'll go on a non-date. What's a non-date? I'm suspicious. Two people, hanging out together somewhere, with food involved, and maybe alcohol, but with the express understanding that it's not a date. And dang it, I smile, because it's the most ridiculous and adorable thing anyone has ever said to me. But you just asked me out. And? Then your non-date is just a date in disguise. I'm losing traction in this argument. I just know it. No, it won't be a date. It'll be terrible, I promise. I'll pick an uncomfortable location, I'll talk about myself the whole time, you won't enjoy it at all. He holds his hand over his heart like he's making a pledge. This whole thing is a terrible idea, absolutely destined for failure. How does he not realize that? I can't date you, I say desperately. Why not? Because you're all, I flap one hand in his direction, this, and I'm all, I make an inarticulate sound and flap the hand around myself. Not like you. We're not in the same league. We're not even on the same planet. I like you, he says, like this solves everything. I'm flustered, and I can't stop myself from asking. Why? I'm staring right at him, which sort of makes me breathless, and the question comes out as a nervous little whisper. He cocks his head to the side and studies me for a second. Because you're sarcastic and funny, and you fought me over paying for your drinks tonight when you must know that I can afford it. As if on cue, a black town car pulls up to the curb. He gives it a quick wave of acknowledgement, then turns back to me. You're smart, and you work so hard to do a good job, even if you never get credit for it. And because I thought you were adorable the first time I saw you, which is saying a lot, since you were choking. I glare at him, and he chuckles. I liked you then, and I didn't even know that someday you'd tell me embarrassing stories in a hospital waiting room, or sing Kenny Rogers, or do the absolute worst sprinkler I've ever seen. He couldn't have shocked me more if he'd slapped me. I can't believe he's been paying attention this entire time, that he noticed me at all. But you said I was silly. It's a last-ditch effort to restore sanity, in the best possible way. He reaches for me slowly. Oh, Lord, baby Jesus in the manger. I've never been in this position before, with someone who looks like him, so I panic. I throw my hands up between us and screech the first thing that pops into my head. Don't try and kiss me! Dear Heavenly Father, if ever there was a moment for the rapture to come and spirit me away, it would be so great if it could happen right now. I'm mortified by what has just fallen out of my mouth. I have no idea how to do any of this, and I know that probably no one has ever said something so idiotic to someone so beautiful, but I'm incredibly nervous, and I don't even hold hands with guys I barely know. I definitely can't handle a kiss. Brody takes a step back and puts his own hands up in mock surrender. I can tell he's trying hard not to laugh, and I would hate him for it if I didn't already hate myself so much. I wasn't going to kiss you, I swear. He smiles. I was going to reach for your hand, but I'll just stay over here if that makes you more comfortable. At this point, I've lost all shred of dignity, so I just go for broke. See, you don't want to go on a date with me. I'm absolutely clueless. I don't know how to flirt properly. I say the wrong things. I'm not at all like the women you usually date. I know, he says, taking a small step forward. That's one of the things I like about you most. One of the things I like about you most. One of the things I like about you most. Like about you most. The words pinball around in my brain. He likes me? His blue eyes look right into mine, and he has this little half smile on his face like he knows 1,000 things I don't know. When I just continue to gape at him, he smirks. He knows he's won.
So, next Saturday then?
Sure, I reply weakly. He doesn't make any move towards me. Maybe he's worried I'll panic again. Smart man. He gives me a little salute and turns towards the black town car still idling at the curb.
Who's that?
I call after him.
That's my driver.
He looks back. I had him meet me. I'm stupefied.
I thought you were taking a cab.
He shudders dramatically. Come now. You must realize I'm far too snobby to take a cab. Now head back in the lobby so I know you got in safely. I wave stupidly and let myself in the building without a backwards glance. What kind of man has a car meet him at 3 a.m. on New Year's just so he can drive his sister and her drunk friends back to a crappy apartment in Hollywood? And what kind of money do you need in order to have a driver on call? Honestly, I'm not even sure I want to know the answer to that. Oh man, I'm in so far over my head. When I get back upstairs to the apartment, I find Miko passed out on our couch in a jumble of blankets with her clothes and makeup still on. At least Max has covered her up. I pull off my heels and pad down the hallway, but stop short when I see Max sitting on my bed waiting for me. She's still wearing her dress and looks up as I come in the room. What's going on with you guys? There's no preamble. What do you... Don't patronize me. It's too early in the morning for that. When I don't respond, she continues. You blush every time you see him.
I do not blush, I say indignantly.
Do I?
You do. And when he speaks to you, you're either stuttering or having verbal diarrhea.
I get it, I grumble. It's embarrassing. To let a guy affect you like that? He clearly makes you nervous.
Of course he makes me nervous, I burst out. Have you seen him?
Barf, he's my brother. She scowls at me in the lamplight. I blow all the air out of my lungs. She's right. He is her brother, and this is totally inappropriate, and likely only going to end awkwardly. As if I need another reason not to be interested in this person.
Wait. Am I interested in this person?
Crap. This breaks some sort of roommate code for sure. You're right. I'm sorry. But don't worry. Nothing is going to happen. Max taps her fingertips on her knees in thought, then starts speaking without looking my way.
Don't be sorry. You didn't do anything. You're both adults, and you can do whatever you want.
She takes a deep breath. And I can tell, having two personal conversations with me in one night is her worst nightmare come true. Brody is a good guy, and I love him. But honestly, he dates a lot of women. And you, I'm guessing, haven't really dated much, and especially not someone like him.
Who said anything about dating?
I squeak. How does she know? Her look says she's not buying anything I'm selling. I become suddenly very interested in my manicure.
I want you to be careful. I don't want you getting hurt.
That's really sweet of you, I say quietly. Whatever, she stands up abruptly. It took me forever to find a roommate who only mildly annoyed me. I don't want to have to look for someone again if, no, when, this whole whatever, she says the word distastefully, goes up like Chernobyl.
I understand. It's all I can think to say.
All right, then. She heads out of my room as quickly as possible. I am totally baffled by the direction this night has taken. I want to replay everything in my mind and figure out the exact moment it started jumping off the rails, but my brain is too fuzzy. Finally, I give up. I'm not going to figure out anything at this hour. I stare at the bed for a moment before slipping out of everything but my panties. Then, in an act that goes against everything I believe in, I climb into bed and fall asleep without washing off my makeup.
Chapter 19. I have some news, Sayla announces as she walks into the all-hands meeting. It's so out of character for her to walk into the room ready to actually start the meeting that everyone instantly falls silent. She sits down in her chair and looks around the table for dramatic effect. We're going to Sundance again this year.
have to stop myself from gasping. This news is far too cool to even be believed. Clearly, no one else agrees, though, because all around me groans and sighs fill the conference room. Everyone starts speaking at once. It's 3 weeks away. There's no way we can dress out of space on that notice. How will we lodge everyone? There's nowhere left to stay. What location is even still available? I can't believe anything would encourage this kind of mutiny. No one ever openly disagrees with Sayla, but the entire staff is questioning her decision. Sayla holds up a hand and signals for everyone to quiet down. I expect her to start screaming, but when she opens her mouth, she's cajoling. It's like she needs to convince them. I'm so confused. I know. It's an impossible task, but we have to do it. SSE is the best, and we do the impossible every day. Riverton decided that they absolutely have to go, and they've asked Barker Ash to partner. They were decided before they even contacted me. So now, it's either make this happen, or allow them to bring in another firm. That's not an option, she adds sharply. The room is still tense but resigned. Everyone here knows what it would mean for SSE if it allowed a client like Riverton and a partner like Barker Ash to work with another event planning firm. We'd run the risk of losing them both. I'm still unsure why there's even a debate. The Sundance Film Festival is one of the coolest events you could ever dream of working. It's a week where celebrities of every letter grade congregate to do press and ski down mountains in Utah. Some of the biggest restaurants and clubs set up satellite venues, and every kind of luxury brand jumps on board in the hopes that Ashton Kutcher will get snapped holding their product while running down a snow-lined street trying to escape the paparazzi. It sounds like the greatest thing ever. Now, the good news is, Sayla continues, that I already called my contacts and found out there are still 3 spaces left. I decided to go with the same venue we had last year. Taylor and the production team start to voice very strong opinions on the issues with the space from last year, but Sayla cuts them off. We're already familiar with the space, and yes, there were issues, but we don't have time to start from scratch. Now, production, please work with Brinkley on who's handling what. Between pulling the permits, arranging parking, calling in local vendors, booking travel, and finding housing, there are too many logistics and too little time. Jen, you and your team can follow me to my office, and we'll talk about the design of the space. As soon as people hear that we have a venue, everyone is going to want to book a party. I think it's best to go ahead and design 10 to 12 layouts that we can easily pull off in the time allotted. And then, when the parties are confirmed, we'll talk them into choosing one of our existing concepts. Everyone in the room looks miserable, but they don't say anything else. When Sayla finally stands to leave the room, the design team follows, but I grab Miko's arm before she walks out. I look around quickly to make sure I won't be overheard. I know it's short notice, but isn't this good news? All of us up in the mountains for a week? It'll be just like camp, only with cool celebrity parties. I bump her with my elbow playfully. She looks bleak. That's what everyone thinks before they go the first time. As far as event planning goes, Sundance is the killing fields. It's 10 days in this tiny town in the mountains, and you have to truck everything in from L.A., because God forbid Sayla would use a local vendor. The space is open all day, and then parties go on all night. And Sayla always overbooks us for events, so sometimes we'll have 3 parties in a single evening, with like a 20-minute changeover. Oh, and there's always a crazy publicist screaming at you about the 200 people who should have been let in an hour ago, or the fact that they want you to turn off the smoke alarm so Bai Ling can smoke indoors. Is Bai Ling even still relevant? I try and tease her out of her mood. It doesn't matter. She'll be there. She sighs. I've got to go. We have 12 different events to design, and she'll probably want options by tomorrow. Oh, God, I thought we'd escaped this year. She turns to go. I'll get you a coffee, I call after her. And a cookie. 2 cookies, Miko calls back. I run to grab my wallet out of my bag so I can sneak out and get some sugar for Miko. I believe her, and I'm sure the festival won't be easy, but I can't help but be excited. It's such a cool thing to get to do, and I've seen pictures of it in magazines for years. I can't wait to see it in person. I pull out my wallet and snag my phone while I'm in my purse. I see a text message from Brody, and my stomach flips. I haven't had any contact with him since New Year's. Brody Ashton. You never followed up, so I assume you think I'll just forget. I'm calling in the non-date. I'll pick you up on Saturday at 6 a.m. What the heck? 6 in the morning? Is he insane? Are you insane? I can't be functional before noon. His response is almost instantaneous. Brody Ashton. I promised you a terrible experience. Sleep deprivation will play into that nicely. 6 a.m. I'll bring caffeine. Okay, I can't help it. I'm more than a little curious about what kind of outing might happen at 6 on a Saturday morning. I text. Where exactly are we going? Brody Ashton. You'll see. Bring your swimsuit. What? My swimsuit? It's January. Brody Ashton. See you Saturday. He has a maddening habit of ignoring my protest. Or maybe he doesn't even hear them because he's so used to girls just doing whatever he says. I'm trying to come up with some sort of cutting response, but Sayla does the one buzz summon. I drop both the phone and the wallet and hurry to jump into the Sundance frenzy. Soon, the coffee trip and text messages are long forgotten. Chapter 20. When I open the door of my lobby on Saturday and step out into the still dark morning, the cold hits me in full force. I wrap my arms around my favorite Longhorn sweatshirt to hold in some warmth, and I don't even try and cover the miserable look on my face. I'll be honest, I don't look cute at all in my leggings and Uggs, and my hair is in a massive bun, but it's a miracle he got me out of bed at all. Looking good isn't possible at this time of day. There's a cherry red vintage Bronco idling at the curb, and since it's the only car with the engine on, I walk over to it. I'm more than a little surprised that this is what he's driving. Shouldn't he be in something flashier? I open the passenger door, and the overhead light comes on, revealing Brody in a faded red hoodie. With the hood on, he looks normal, young even, and far too awake and perky for this time of day. Good morning, sunshine. He smiles, and it lights up his whole face. And for a second, I'm way less annoyed about the hour. That is, until I step up on the running board and my brain processes his outfit. Board shorts? Then I notice the two surfboards hanging out the back of the Jeep. I stare at the offending objects without moving to take a seat. I thought the request for a swimsuit might be for use at a spa or even, in a possibly creepy scenario, involving a hot tub. But going to the beach in the middle of winter? That has never even crossed my mind. Please tell me you're joking. I say miserably. I promised you a horrible experience, he says, and gently pulls on my elbow until I'm forced into the seat. And this has all the makings of one. I snort inelegantly and buckle my seatbelt. First of all, he says as he reaches into a cup holder and hands me a to-go mug, the promised caffeine. I'll have you know there isn't a single coffee place open this early. I had to make you that myself. He says with mock seriousness. He's so cute with his hood pulled down over his ears. I cover up my smile by taking a sip of coffee. Thank you. So, like I was saying about the horrible experience, he says, throwing the car into first and driving down the street, this will be one of the worst. You won't hear an argument from me, I grumble. Brody ignores me. First of all, it's winter, and it's freezing. And the water is so cold, it feels a little like you're dying. Also, I'm taking you to do something that I like to do, with no concern or thought about what you'd prefer. Then we add in time of day. He looks over at me with a wink. And despite myself, I'm feeling a lot more awake. And the whole swimsuit thing. I mean, being half naked on a first date? Non-date, I correct him. Being half naked on our first non-date? That's a lot of pressure for you. I can't help the laugh that escapes my lips. You're such a jerk. Totally. But you agreed to come, so now you're stuck with me for a while. I'm a little disoriented by this laid-back version of Brody that's so at odds with the stoic executive version. Regardless, I'm in this cool car with the prettiest guy I've ever met, headed out on the most creative date anyone's ever come up with. I decide not to overthink it. I tuck one of my boots up underneath me on the seat and watch the dark building zip by my window. We drive to Santa Monica because, according to Brody, the easier waves there are good for a first-timer. I have to change in the public restroom, and I have to tell you, getting on a wetsuit by yourself in the freezing, smelly beach bathroom is pretty damn terrible. I finally squeeze into everything, but it's a close call. I'm starting to think that maybe he really is trying to make this day terrible, and that it's not a joke. But then I walk out onto the sand, and he's there on his knees, rubbing wax onto one of the boards, and I forget about whether or not the date is terrible, or that I am cold, or how my thighs look in this unflattering neoprene. At this point, I might not be able to tell you my name. He's wearing his wetsuit, but he doesn't zip it up all the way, so it's hanging down from his waist, leaving his too perfect back bare for public viewing. And well, I guess this explains the whole question of why he's so tan. His hair has turned wavy in the sea air and keeps falling into his face as he works. When he looks up at me, he flashes a grin and sits back on his haunches, and it's the first time I get a full view of his abs. I may or may not have tripped in the sand. I try and cover it up by searching the sand for the imaginary impediment to my step. Who has abs like that? Who goes shirtless when it's 50 degrees out? By the time I walk up next to him, I've lost the power of speech. "Are you ready for this?" he asks. He stands, and I look beyond him to the gray water already dotted with surfers. The terror of what he's asking me to do quickly takes over any giddiness I might have felt about the state of his six-pack. The waves aren't really big, but I can't even imagine forcing my cold feet into the surf, let alone throwing myself into the churning water. I watch as one of the surfers pops up on a wave and almost immediately gets dragged under. "Absolutely not," I say, not taking my eyes from the cold water. He zips himself into the rest of his wetsuit and hands me one of his boards. He props the other under his arm and turns towards the water. "Don't be a baby." "I'm not a baby," I say indignantly, and follow behind him slowly. My argument is quickly squashed, though, because as soon as my toes touch the surf, I scream and run in the opposite direction. Cute boy or not, there is no freaking way I'm going in that icy water. "I think I'll just wait for you here." I glare out at the ocean like it's just personally offended me. "You didn't even get in," he chuckles. "Come on. Once you're in, it's not really cold anymore." "That's because your body goes numb," I whine nervously. "Landon," he says earnestly. It's almost a whisper, so soft and sweet sounding that my toes curl into the sand. "It'll be fun, I promise." I look down at his long, elegant fingers reaching out to me and back at the hair whipping around his blue eyes, and I don't even care what he's asking for at this point. I will say yes to anything. I stick my cold hand inside his warm one and walk with him into the water. I stay in the ocean with him for almost an hour, and he's right. After a few minutes, I don't even feel cold anymore. I fail miserably at any attempt to get up on a wave, but I'm content to straddle the board and bob along the surface of the water. Brody finally gives up on pushing me to try and surf when it's clear to both of us I don't have whatever innate surfing gene makes it look so easy when he does it. While we wait for waves, we talk about anything and everything. His family, my own, where we went to school, what he did at work all day, which was impressive, and what I did at work all day, which was not nearly as cool. "So how do y'all decide who works where?" I ask, watching my feet swing back and forth on either side of my board. "What do you mean?" Brody looks back behind me to judge the coming waves. What is it about being in proximity to a guy that makes you suddenly fascinated with inane things? The way his jaw looks when he hasn't shaved, or that one stubborn piece of hair that keeps curling around his ear. Wait, did he just ask me a question? Oh, right. "I mean, do you cover some and Liam does the others? Do you have managers who aren't family members? How does it work?" I'm not sure if it's impertinent to ask, but business fascinates me, and I'm so curious about how theirs is structured.
We have several general managers, and Liam and I oversee them. It's geography more than anything else. He's on the west side, so he takes everything west of the 405. I look out for everything else when I'm not managing 25.
You manage that space by yourself?
I own that space by myself. I look up from the water swirling around my board.
Really?
Really. It's the first time I've ever gone out on my own.
He looks a little sheepish.
I'm totally impressed.
That's fantastic. How's everything going? Is it doing as well as it seems?
He smiles again. It's doing pretty well. It was a significant investment, but it's close to being one of our most popular venues.
Honestly, that's so incredible. I can't even imagine.
I shake my head in wonder.
What does 25 stand for?
He chuckles a little. It's sort of childish.
Oh man, do I want to know? Is it something gross?
I laugh with him.
Don't be absurd. Of course it's not something gross.
It was Mark McGuire's number, and I was a huge Bash Brothers fan when I was little.
Didn't he get busted for steroids?
He puts a hand over his heart like my words physically hurt him.
Don't bring that up. I'm still not over it.
We both laugh, and then I bring up something I've wondered for a while.
What's with the Roman numerals?
He shrugs. Just seemed cool.
I nod at that.
He's right. It is cool.
He's cool, and smart, and incredibly successful, and I have no idea how we got here. It's hard to reconcile the godlike man from the elevator with the surfer sitting in front of me.
I smile to myself.
I guess he's just as unexpected as I am.
I'm having so much fun that I'd happily sit out in the water with him until sundown. But he says my lips are blue, so we both finally paddle for the shore. Before I'm even all the way out of the water, Brody runs to our stuff and comes back with a big fluffy beach towel. He wraps it around my shoulders and tucks it in on itself, and then uses his hands to rub up and down my arms to warm me up. I look down at the towel bound tightly around me. I feel like a burrito. I look up at him, and the giggle dies on my lips. He's staring down into my face, and his hands are paused on my upper arms, holding me still. Water is dripping from the ends of his hair, down onto the front of my towel, but I don't move. I don't even breathe. He reaches up and runs his index finger lightly over the bridge of my nose.
You have freckles here, he whispers.
I never noticed. He cups my face in his hands and tilts my head back to further meet his eyes. My heart stops.
Just so you're prepared, he smiles.
This time, I am going to kiss you.
And then his lips are on mine, and they're so warm against my cold ones that it almost burns.
He tastes like salt water, or I do, I'm not sure. I only know that I'm kissing him back, and it's so perfect I think I might die. It's soft and sweet, and the whole time he holds my face like I'll blow away if he doesn't keep me in place. I push up on my toes to get closer to him, and the pressure changes, becomes more intense. Brody's kiss is utterly him, confident, sexy, and thoroughly grown up. After a minute, or an hour, his lips slow down into a few sweet pecks on my lower lip, my nose, my cheek. Finally, he pulls back and looks at me with a slow smile. My heart starts beating again, and I say the first stupid thing that comes to my mind. That wasn't very non-date-like. I try and sound stern, but I'm grinning like an idiot. He grins back and kisses my nose again, and then his smirk is back. Your lips really are blue. I was only trying to warm them up.
He reaches down and scoops up all of our stuff and then looks up at me.
Other parts of you might be blue too. If you want, I can check.
Kiss those too?
I roll my eyes dramatically and walk past him to change into dry clothes. I never look back, but the whole way to the bathroom, I keep my head ducked underneath the edge of the towel so he won't see me smile. I walk back to the Bronco, feeling warm for the first time in hours. Brody is already back in his hoodie, with the heater going full blast. I jump in and put my fingers against the vent, shivering gratefully when they warm up a little.
Do you like pancakes?
He asks abruptly.
I love pancakes. It's the truth. And right about now, I think I could eat a dozen. He nods approvingly. I know a place. He pulls the Jeep back onto PCH, and I study him while he drives.
What?
He asks when he catches me staring.
You surprise me.
And why is that?
You, this?
I gesture around the car. This isn't what I expected from a date with you.
And what did you expect?
I don't know. Something involving reservations, maybe?
He frowns. What did I say wrong?
Is that what you would have preferred?
There's an edge in his voice, and that aloof, haughty mask is back on his face.
Don't do that, I scold.
Do what?
Don't pull that face or that voice.
I turn in my seat and look right at him.
I don't know what I said, but I sure didn't mean to startle you back into Brody Ashton.
Confusion clouds his features, but at least it's not the look he just wore.
I am Brody Ashton.
Not today, I smile at him. Today you're just a guy who took me surfing.
He looks startled, and then a little sheepish.
And surfing was...
Surfing was perfect,
I smile at him.
Best non-date ever.
His own little smile starts to play around the edge of his mouth.
I am curious, though. Why did you choose something so different from your usual dates?
He looks over at me quickly, then back at the road in front of him.
I can actually see the wheels turning in his mind as he debates his answer.
We come to a stoplight before he looks over at me again.
Because you're not like other dates, and so the usual wouldn't work with you.
Meaning, I'm not composed or cultured enough to warrant a sophisticated evening from him?
My spirit plummets.
I try to keep the disappointment off my face, but he must see something there.
It couldn't be the usual date, because you're different, he says softly.
His tone only makes me more confused. I search desperately for something to keep myself from embarrassing myself further, and settle on rubbing my hands together in front of the heating vent. I'm watching my hands rub back and forth nervously when Brody grabs one, brings my fingers to his lips, and kisses them sweetly.
Landon, he says my name like a caress.
It had to be something different, because everything feels different with you.
I'm stunned by what he says, and when I smile stupidly over at him in shock, he leans over quickly and kisses the grin off my face.
The car behind us honks, angry that our speed has dropped, and he leans back over and winks at me.
They were looking a little blue again, he says with a grin.
The next day, I'm sorting and folding laundry in my room while I catch Mama up on my week. I don't know how she knew, but she must have sensed something in my tone, because she asks point blank if I've met any nice boys lately, and I find myself telling her about the non-date.
Well, he sounds like something real special, Landon. She practically croons into the phone.
He's very nice, but I'm not sure yet if he's special.
I ignore the flutter in my belly that says I'm lying. I'm not going to admit it to my mother when I haven't even admitted it to myself.
Oh, pish, she says dismissively. I knew the first time I saw your daddy that he was the man for me. He'd come to my cousin Margie's 4th of July barbecue, and she introduced us, and he reached out to shake my hand, and I swear, that was it. I keep folding the t-shirts in front of me, but can't help but smile along as she talks, even though I've heard the story a million times before.
Mama, he just took me surfing, and then to breakfast. It's a little harder than you think to find the one.
See, that's where you're wrong, baby. When you find your man, it's almost too easy. Getting married and having a mortgage, kids and a business to run, and finding a way to stay in love day in, day out, that's the tougher part. But the beginning, that part's easy as pie. That's why they call it falling, because it happens before you have time to stop yourself.
Okay, I roll my eyes. I'll remember that, Mama. I'm gonna let you go, though. I gotta put all this laundry up before it starts to wrinkle.
She probably knows I'm avoiding the conversation, but doesn't call me out on it.
Okay, girl, love ya. Call me later.
I hang up with her and drop the phone onto the bed. I'm still smiling at the conversation as I grab a pile of towels and turn around to put them in the linen closet in the hall.
Max is standing in my doorway, holding her bag with an odd look on her face. I hadn't heard her come home.
"He took you surfing?"
she asks me incredulously.
I hadn't anticipated her wanting to talk about this, but I'm confused by the look on her face.
"He did," I say carefully.
"Is that bad?"
I ask for lack of a better word. She shakes her head slowly back and forth.
"No, he doesn't really, not since," she says as she catches herself mid-sentence and closes her mouth completely.
I stand there waiting for her to finish her thought. Finally, she speaks.
"I'm just surprised."
With that, she shrugs and heads off to her room. I'm left standing there, holding a stack of towels, wondering what the heck that was all about.
Chapter 21. The next Wednesday, we host the Riverton Group and a small team from Barker Ash in our conference room to finalize details for Sundance. The lead from each SSE team is sitting around the table, along with Selah, Diego, Brody, and me. Of course, since I'm the official catch-all for just about everything. Diego is going over design layouts, and I absolutely refuse to look at Brody for fear that Selah will see how bad I'm crushing on him. We've exchanged texts a few times, but it is the first time I've seen him since our non-date. I take diligent notes and offer Selah answers when she needs them, trying not to gag when she flirts with every man in the room.
"And it's possible to have this many parties in one space?" Diego asks finally.
"Possible and necessary," Selah beams at him. "The more cast parties you host, the more your brand gets featured. The association with Barker Ash and 25 more specifically is a huge draw, so everyone came calling when they found out we'd be in town."
"Is everything sorted out with the liquor delivery?"
the man sitting next to Diego asks.
"It's always a bit of a pain working in Utah, because they won't allow alcohol to be shipped across state lines. We deal with that by having a local restaurant there order an excess amount of product in exchange for a small markup, and we buy it off them," Taylor explains.
"And everything is handled with the permits, the licenses, etc.?" Brody asks.
"We're all set. Walker flew out on Monday and met with the city, so we're good," Taylor answers.
"And what's the weather supposed to be? I heard there was a blizzard last year," Diego asks. When no one answers, I look up at him.
"Upper 20s is what they're estimating now, though I'm tracking it regularly. I'll let you know if there's a drastic change in either direction."
"And lodging?"
I look down at my notes and then back up. "I sent details to your assistant this morning. Both your teams are booked at the Waldorf."
"And featured drinks?" he fires back. "We'll change daily depending on the party. Each is themed in some way to the movie and the cast you're hosting."
"And you got the margarita mix?" His eyes narrow, but I don't even change expression.
"At the Patron party, maybe, but not at any of ours. You asked us to come up with several inventive variations, and we've done that, but none of them are margaritas."
Ever since the first party, and Brody's warning that people will treat me with as much or as little respect as I allow them, I've done my best to be only professional with the Riverton team. Diego is still a flirt, but when I don't encourage it, he tends to mellow out in the course of a meeting.
"Very good, querida." Diego smiles beatifically.
"I think we're good here, unless you have any questions."
He looks at Brody, and then the rest of the team, and when they all shake their heads, he stands to leave. Everyone files out on either end of the room, and I'm one of the last to leave after packing up all my paperwork and my computer. I head in the direction of the door, and only then do I notice that Brody is dogging my steps. I'm still not going to acknowledge him in this setting, and I think he gets it because he hasn't tried to engage me in conversation or make eye contact once. He now knows as well as I do how Selah might react to that. Still, it's more than a little odd not to speak to him at all. Just before I reach the door, I feel a playful tug on the back of my ponytail, and I giggle quietly and throw him an amused expression over my shoulder. As soon as I do, Brody's face goes completely blank. At first I think I've done something wrong, but then I turn around to follow his line of sight. Selah is standing in the doorway, watching us. "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death." She's seen the exchange, and there's no covering up what has just happened, because no way is hair-pulling professional behavior. Her face is frozen in a grimace.
but her eyes dart back and forth between the two of us like she's trying to solve a particularly difficult riddle. I feel myself blush. And just like that,